On this week's show, Superhuman Dirt Moving with Ken Gray from Dig Robotics.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started The Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Trent Leinenbach, great to sit down with you. I've gotten you a couple times in the last few weeks, so it's kind of awesome to share the stage with you again this morning. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, it seems like when it rains, it pours. You can go months and months without hopping in, but then a couple times in a couple weeks, so yeah.
Yeah, hoping to bring you back in the rotation a little bit more, too, now that, you know, things are calming down and everybody's got a new 2025, so this is awesome. And Ken Gray, proof that when you cover an article and somebody reaches out to you on the LinkedIn thing, you can end up on this show. So you guys will get to know Ken here in a minute, but Ken is with Dig Robotics, and we happen to cover an article recently about a couple of the things that are converging to make Dig Robotics really interesting. And I covered the article, and Ken reached out, and now he's here. So, Ken, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys, and it's nice to meet you both. And I am so impressed at how quickly you titled this episode. You know, Superhuman Operators, man. That's what it is. That's what we're all about at Dig.
Hey, and this is going to be really interesting to get into. Before we dive into it, guys, though, remember, you got to follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/@TheContechCrew. Follow us on social media. Make sure to jump over there to LinkedIn and follow The Contech Crew, and go to thecontechcrew.com to hear more about what we're up to these days. Are you struggling to wade through the AI hype? Do you want to just learn how people in construction are using it? Or do you want to know how vendors in construction technology are building the tools of the future? Well, then join us at the AI Excellence in Construction Virtual Summit next week on April 2nd to find out from those experts. We'll be running multiple tracks, and I know you can't be in two places at once, so we'll be recording it for us. Sign up now to join us at placersolutions.io/crew. That's right, placersolutions.io/crew. placersolutions.io/crew. You don't want to miss this one. All right, Ken. Okay, so Dig Robotics is where you end up, but how did you get here, and what does this story look like?
So, okay, I'm going to give my standard disclaimer that there's nobody on this planet that loves the sound of their own voice more than Ken Gray. So interrupt me when you have to. I'd much rather have a conversation than a download. So, but I'll let me get into the story. It always starts with mom, family lore. Mom said, "I came home from Mrs. Summer's second grade class one day and announced that I was going to be an engineer and design equipment for Caterpillar." And there's no way I use the word engineer or design, but that was what I said I was going to do. And then that's what I did. I was largely what I was able to do. I'm still the little boy pushing sand around in the sandbox with the palm of my hand. I love it. And I always loved it. I still love it. So I went to school. I have a master's degree in mechanical engineering, and then I was fortunate enough to study business at Stanford and at the Institute for Management Development in Lausanne, Switzerland, through the course of my 3 decades at Caterpillar. You know, there I was fortunate enough to be what most companies would call a chief innovation officer. I was CAT's first global director of innovation. Prior to that, I ran as a director of excavation division. I ran the $2 billion large excavator group. And then prior to that, I was director of building construction products, where I ran the small excavator group, which is about a $1 billion unit. So I'm a product developer. I am the guy that you can blame for not liking the piece of construction or mining equipment that's running on the job site. That's what I love. I've always loved it, and love the operators, the guys that pull the joysticks. I just love it. It's what I do. Wouldn't change a thing. And I guess the other thing I should say is that then I retired from Caterpillar 2015 after at the end of 2015. And I've said a lot of times, my mentor has told me that I completely failed at retirement because I just can't stop doing this. So I've gone from the Fortune 50 company or Fortune 100 company to the startup world. And this is the third, Dig Robotics is the third startup that I've been a part of. It's the first one that's totally focused on my passion, which is, you know, construction mining equipment, and formed it about a year and a half ago with my two co-founders, Noel Marotam and Dr. Oded Medina.
I have to say, the chief innovation officer at Caterpillar for large industrial commercial mining equipment, like that's got like the 10-year-old Trent like foaming at the mouth. Like that's like a 10-year-old dream job position right there, Ken.
I tell you what, I couldn't have scripted it any better than that, Trent. I would do it all over again, no hesitation. I loved it. It was great. We also lived internationally doing this. Our children went to elementary school in Japan and then middle school in Europe and Belgium and Brussels and high school in Chicago. And then they went to university in the U.S. But, you know, we had the great, this was also the great gray family adventure, this job at CAT. So it's been a pretty amazing experience.
I mean, that's wild too, that just looking through your LinkedIn experience, there was all these stops. And then I'm realizing, wait, it's Caterpillar, but it's in different countries as he's growing through the process. But if you take us all the way back, yeah, you probably didn't use the words as a 2-year-old, but mom interprets, you know, that's what they do. They interpret intention. But how do you go from loving that dirt to making this career possible and following it and continuing to grow with it? I mean, the path's just amazing.
Well, let's say one quick thing about mom before I answer that question. Mom, I was the easiest person to buy a gift for a mom ever. So you know how many Caterpillar models that I have for birthdays and Christmas? And I never got tired of receiving them. Anyway, that's another
thing. Well, I hope you still have them, because I think they're collector's items now.
I do. In fact, I've just bombed my office. I mean, I've shown people this model before. I don't know if you can see this one. I've shown people, this is the 320C. This is a famous excavator along the way that one of my teams developed. It's even got dust on it. But this one's particularly cool. This is a prototype of the model that you could buy in the Caterpillar gift store or Caterpillar dealership, but it's all steel. The tracks are steel. It was literally the first prototype. And so I got my hands on that somehow, and I will never let go of it. So the way to do that, you know, I think first of all, you know, all the progression through all those roles and, you know, with the same kind of objective in mind, it starts with a love of it. You know, the 10-year-old boy that, you know, pushing dirt around, you know, that just never changed. I mean, it's just still a blast. Even after, you know, 45 years of doing this, it's still a blast. I love it. I wouldn't change a thing. But that's the beginning of it. You really need to have a passion for it, because man, there are some bad days. You know, you in the jobs that you have in construction, you know, you get paid to go through the bad days, right? The good days are a blast. And I didn't need to get paid today, but man, I'm sure glad I got paid, because those bad days are coming again. So it starts with that passion. You really need to love it. And I've always coached people to be ready for the opportunities that present themselves, because you can't in a big company or in the construction world or practically anywhere else in life, you can't dictate what opportunities are going to come to you. You can only be prepared to respond to the ones that come to you. You know, Louis Pasteur said, chance favors the prepared mind. So educate yourself for the next level. And then I always said that, you know, when a job presents itself, if it adds to your personal depth or breadth in the direction that you want to go, then that's a good one to take. And if it's a little bit scary, that's probably a good one to take. If it's terrifying, maybe not. But if it's a little bit intimidating, I want to take that one on, because that's growth.
Yeah, that's that fascinating edge, right? It's between the bleeding edge and the cutting edge, and pushing yourself and then pushing yourself off the cliff. They're a little different, I like that preparation and but understanding the path. That's an interesting thing for us here in construction, because I think where you are in the heavy equipment space, some of those paths are a little more defined, right? Not your personal path, but the path themselves of growth, especially just, again, as watching your LinkedIn, you can see a progression. Here in construction, especially, a lot of our new people are forging those paths and trying to help companies create them. So what advice can you give to those folks on forging that path? And maybe, you know, some of the leaders, they don't necessarily listen to us, but somebody who's gone as far up in the world as you have has a little cloud here for people to listen to. What can you do as a business to create that room for growth for your people?
I used to always coach that you're responsible for your own professional growth. At the same time, as a business, we are responsible for our professional growth of our people. You know, I always used to say to both, you know, if there were two people in my office that were in an argument, I'd turn to one and say, the responsibility for resolving this is 100% yours. And I would immediately turn to the next person and say the same thing. You know, you have to take command as an individual. This is where I want to go. So this is the level. These are the things I'm going to do to educate myself. And these are the, you know, and then, as I said, respond to the opportunities that present. As a company, we need to be thinking about the development plan for each one of our people. I mean, every one of them that we think has potential to be a leader, a manager, leader in our business, what are we doing to ensure that each of these people have access to the education that they need, and we're supporting that and giving them that freedom to take those steps. And then what are we doing in terms of advancing people and giving them the coaching that they need, as well as ever increasing responsibility as they go from assignment to assignment? What am I doing as a leader to develop them? I literally had a development plan for everyone that worked for me. What am I doing for every one of them?
That's interesting. You know, I have to simplify what people say, because my brain is simpler. But it seems to me, Ken, that, you know, you knew where you wanted to go. You didn't necessarily know how to get there.
Yeah.
But you prepared yourself to turn right, turn left, go up, go down.
Yeah.
At the moment you needed to, to facilitate the end goal, right?
I had spent a lot of time in the pure engineering parts of the company, and I had an opportunity to go have a much more customer facing role in, you know, working with dealers and end user customers. And I remember my chief engineer said, "Ken, why would you ever want to," and these are exactly the words he used, "why would you ever want to throw away all of this engineering experience and go work with customers?" His perspective was so narrow on the engineering. What I wanted was to learn how to run the business and to get back, you know, I would grow trees, and I would go grow trees from seeds and peddle them on my Stingray bicycle when I was a little kid. So how do I get back into that excitement, that entrepreneurial excitement? And I knew that if I was going to do that, that I was going to go get closer to our dealers and end user customers again. I also knew that if I was going to climb higher in the organization and, you know, if I was going to get to that director level, that I was going to have more experience than the purely engineering discipline, that I was going to have much more exposure and experience and success much closer to the business side, to the marketing. I needed to understand a P&L. What do these accountants do? And those closer to dealer customer roles gave me that exposure that I might not have had in engineering. So I don't know if I'm rambling around there, Trent, but the answer to the question was, look, I'm not throwing anything away. I get to keep this experience forever. But I'm going to add to that experience when I, you know, by understanding marketing, sales, and the business unit aspects of the company as I go forward.
Yeah, it's becoming that well-rounded leader and well-rounded, more generalist, right? You could, and we need those people who stay specialists, right? And they're very, you know, deep in their depth of knowledge and design, et cetera, of what they might be creating. But that's not for everybody. And so taking the different path and kind of getting well-rounded sounds like that, you know, fact that you had a mechanical engineering degree, a master's, and then found your way into business school as well. You have that, you know, push for well-roundedness. Now I want to dive into this. I mean, you pulled out that model for and showed it, the prototype. We are not talking small equipment here, right? We are talking heavy equipment, and it is fascinating to see the change in it. You know, we point here in construction to you guys on a regular basis, because probably in your years of designing and being a part of this, you have seen this come from a pretty much a giant mechanical thing. It is a high tech device on wheel, I don't want to call it wheels. I'm going to see, this is where the IT guy in me stumbles over what to even call it, but it is not just a piece of heavy equipment. It is a piece of heavy technology. Now, what was that evolution like from your seat?
It can change slowly, because look, I always thought of when we were developing machines, I always think of there are kind of five dimensions that I have to satisfy when I put a machine out in the field. And we can get really way too deep into this, but customers are always thinking about safety first. At least I hope they are. So we're always thinking as a manufacturer about safety first. And then we're thinking about performance of the machine, because we are talking about big machines. That 320 is a 20 metric ton machine, you know, but that's the small end of, I mean, that's really toward the small end of the equipment that we're talking about. Then reliability is really key. Everybody knows enough about construction sites to know, look, I mean, that excavator's running, how many people are depending on that machine, and how many other machines are depending on that machine? So reliability is incredibly important. Then the next level is cost. You know, I mean, I can't just start throwing features at a machine and be charging more for it, because, you know, I'm fond of saying, and nobody's proven me wrong on this, so somebody's going to call me on the carpet and ask for the data, but I don't think the price of dirt has changed with it. Inflation adjusted in 100 years, the margins are tight. And so I would say that, you know, that I would say cost is really, really important. And then the last aspect of it, you know, if you can satisfy all those other needs, I really want to be environmentally conscious too. So machines have progressed along those five areas over time. I keep hearing that construction and mining customers are slow to adopt new technology. No. If you give them a really solid business case built on those five parameters, they will buy your widget. But you have got to give them a really clear business case. So I think it's more that these are just not easy. It's not easy to improve these machines, but when you can, and again, when you deliver better product along those five dimensions, they will come to you. So I think over time I've seen this progression. I mean, think about just the improvements in safety alone. I mean, when I started running, I don't even know if I had I know I didn't use the seatbelt. I don't even know if I had a belt in the 631 that I was running the first time. You know, bouncing around like, you know, they put the kids on the 631 scrapers because we had the backs for it. You know, rollover protection and fire suppression. So you can see the advancements in safety over time. Significant advancements in safety. And then from a performance standpoint, you know, a 20-ton machine today does the job that a 30-ton machine did 10 years or 15 years ago. I mean, the advancements have just been steady in terms of what these machines produce. From a reliability point of view, there's just night and day difference between. We stopped talking about downtime and started talking about uptime. And that's a real change in the industry too. I mean, you know, you want to make sure that the machine has 99% plus availability today. And that's a huge change from when my career began, a huge change. And then from an environmental standpoint, think about what we've done with just emissions control. We introduced a big hybrid excavator, 336 EH hybrid excavator. Way back in 2013 was when that machine first came out. And that was a tier four interim machine. We introduced that machine in a theater, closed doors, and we rolled the machine running into the theater. You know, a closed environment, that's how clean the emissions were from that machine. When I started at Caterpillar, if you weren't belching black smoke, everybody thought you weren't getting any work done. Biodegradable fuels, biodegradable lubricants. In fact, lubricant, you know, oil-free, lubricant-free joints in machines today. And that's, those are not only, you know, for maintenance, but those are also environmental as well. I mean, I can't point to anything on the machine that hasn't gotten better. Even the glass. Think about, you know, the impact resistant materials that we're using in windscreens. And it's just amazing. It's just amazing how much change there's been. Just amazing. You know, I don't think the first machine I ran had hydraulics. Let me think about that. In fact, it didn't.
Two things there I want to break down. One is the goal. Caterpillar's goal over time has been to continually improve and continuous improvement around the products that they create. For some reason, especially in construction and construction tech, we have this like push for disruption. We want to disrupt you. And like I've tried to say this over and over, disruption is a byproduct, not a goal. The goal should be continually providing those types of things that you just said. They obviously adjust depending on what you're building, but those general categories work over time. And again, I think disruption's, again, a byproduct. It could happen, right? But ultimately, also, it's an evolution. And Caterpillar today doesn't look like it did in the beginning. Like you said, it didn't have hydraulics. And did anybody give mining and construction credit for adding hydraulics as a technology innovation? No, because it's not part of their limited definition, right? This is a definitional issue as well. And so I get really frustrated in both of those areas, because if you focus on those things, then you can really make a difference. And if that difference makes a disruption, so be it. But it could just make an evolution. You used that word earlier, and that's what I'd rather, and I think we'll see more of. So
I'll ask you this question rhetorically, and then I'll come back to it. But what is innovation? What is it? What do you mean when you say innovation? Do you mean a revolutionary new product? Do you mean a product that we've never made before, or to be able to serve an application we never thought of before? Is it okay to be an improvement of a machine? How about when we moved from cables to hydraulics? Is that an innovation? You bet it is. But the machines didn't, the jobs the machines were doing didn't change. So I've often thought, Jeff, that the first thing to do, if you're talking about being more innovative, start by telling me what that means to your company and your business. You tell me what that means. Then start building change in your business that serves your critical customers' needs.
Yeah.
And then when you do that, if they start coming to you more, they come back to you and more of them come to you, then I think you're going to be able to say, you know, we were successful in innovating to satisfy their needs. I think you need to make sure that you've defined what that means, that you know what your customers' critical requirements are, and that the work you are doing is all about delivering on those requirements. And that's where innovative stuff comes from. I used to say that I didn't want unconstrained innovation on my team, right? I wanted them focused on those five parameters. I want to, you know, safety, performance, reliability, cost, and environment. And I didn't want them working on, although it might be important, I didn't want the next generation of children's diapers to come out of my team. It's not what I want them working on. It's valuable for somebody to be working on at P&G. But not a cat. So that's the way I think about it. Sorry.
Solving real problems, right?
You bet. And if you do, they'll buy it. They'll come to you.
Part of the breadth of what you were talking about when you went out there and went after the more customer roles. And I mean, you've got to learn what the problems are that exist for your audience, right? And that's the
you do.
And when people want to say that construction isn't very innovative and they don't want to change, you probably just haven't made a product that solves the problem. If they're
look,
because I can
hard.
Tell you, boots on the ground, if the new tools hit the toolbox, those guys will fight over the new tools.
You
right?
bet.
I mean, so absolutely. Don't tell me they
and,
won't use
and
it.
And if they're not using my tool, that's not their fault.
Exactly.
That's my fault. Because I haven't either built a machine that satisfies their needs, or I haven't communicated at all clearly what, you know, how it will satisfy their needs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's it. So
that's totally true. It is part of the communication and telling the story, right? That is part of opening people up to understanding. And I love that you started with the fundamentals of no fun defining things, but defining innovation for your company is really important. Depending on, you know, innovation for a general contractor is very different than innovation for a trade contractor, than innovation for a designer. So, but what I want to get to is, you retired and then you are horrible at retirement, and you are now here building something in Dig Robotics that we just got to get to, because this is, it's something we've been watching. And I can remember doing the earliest of these shows and really predicting that you guys would eventually be here and watching a couple of attempts at this. So what is it that you're doing, and why is it different this time?
We have robotics in our name, right? So let's start there. Everybody assumes that we're going to eliminate the operator and these machines are going to be robots out there and they're just going to be doing the job without any supervision. But you've titled this episode correctly, the superhuman operator is where we're at right now as a business. Customers are not in great numbers asking us to automate. They are pointing out that there's a shortage of really high quality operators. When they can find them, they're expensive, you know, and I don't understand it at all, but people don't want to sit and pull joysticks 10 hours a day. For me, that's a blast. I'm going to go out and move dirt. But you know what? I have to be careful. Not a lot of other people. Well, there's a lot of people like to do it. But so we're trying to solve this, help them solve this operator problem. And then let me finish with the problem statement first. Volvo Construction a number of years ago did a study that looked at the variation in performance among operators, as well as the variation in efficiency among them. They studied excavator drivers, and they found that the difference in productivity, tons per hour or cubic yards per hour, however you want to measure it, excavation productivity, varied by 300%. Think about that, by 300%, 3x. And that the efficiency numbers among, and these are among skilled operators, among experienced operators, that 300%, the efficiency numbers vary by 150%. Now, if you're a site manager and you're managing a huge excavation, how in the world are you going to know whether you're going to be on time or on budget with that kind of variation among operators? How do you do it? It sounds like a game of liar's poker to me. You know, everybody's out there, and from day to day, the performance varies as well. It's not just operator to operator; it's among them. So, what we decided to do was focus in on two things: how do we get the lowest performing operator up to the highest level, and the same on the efficiency side. So, how do we move the mean productivity and the mean efficiency to the right? And again, think about my five characteristics. That's improving the productivity or the performance, and it's reducing costs. How do we push them to the right? And how do we hold them there? How do we keep the operator there all day long? And then the other part of this, which we had a total performance focus when we started this, Jeff, people have been pushing us for more on, well, can I use this tool to onboard new operators? How do I do that? I'd really like to do that. How do I ramp new and infrequent operators up quickly and get them up to speed? I didn't mention the Volvo numbers around that, but the study results. But if you put novice operators in and infrequent operators in, the productivity delta is 7x. It's just unbelievable. So what are we doing? How are we doing it? So we're combining three technologies that are pretty familiar in engineering. One of them is kinematics, which is just the mechanical engineering study of motion. and what some people call motion planning. So, you know, the Tesla autopilot is a form of motion planning. And, you know, I want to be able to, you know, define a path and hold the vehicle on that path. And then the second technology that we're bringing in is machine vision or video analytics. So cameras that actually see what's happening on the job site. And then the third part that we're bringing, the third technology we're bringing in is the buzzword. We've argued about putting AI in the name of our company, but it's machine learning or AI. And how these three things work together in the article that you referenced, Jeff, is that we can calculate for the thousands of scoops there are every day in a big excavation. We can calculate the ideal path that the bucket should follow for maximum productivity and minimum fuel consumption and minimum machine wear and tear for every one of the literally thousands of strokes through the day. But that's a theoretical calculation, right? And I'm going to say it, shit happens out there that doesn't follow theory very well. So what the camera is doing, what the 3D scanner is doing, the machine vision, is it's responding. It's actually watching what is happening in the bucket in real time. In fact, it happens so fast that if you were to break a bucket tooth, the system would know in milliseconds that the bucket's changed. It can respond a lot faster than the human can respond, at least in terms of its awareness. And then the third element of this is machine learning. I'm not telling the machine what kind of material it's digging in. It's digging in sand, or it's digging in clay, or it's digging in shot rock in a mining application. Couldn't care less. Because the AI is going to tell the system what the operator is running in. Just by how the machine responds to whatever is happening in the bucket, the machine knows what it needs to do. So the first scoop might not be great. You know, the second scoop, the AI is going to give the operator better guidance. And then those first two scoops are going to inform the third one. And the first three are going to inform the fourth one, and so on. So by the time that you are with a handful of loads, the machine is teaching the operator how to do it. So the way that the system is shown up in the cab, the very basic system, is that there are just a few independent variables that an operator has to control, but they're extremely difficult to control at the same time. It's the depth of the bucket. It's the angle that the bucket is cutting through the material. So what is it scooping through at? It's the speed of that cut. And then very importantly, it's the timing of the cut. When are we done? I used to say, you got the order, get out of my office. So when have I moved enough material into the bucket that I'm done, that by the time I extract, it's going to be a perfectly full bucket? Because I don't want to underfill the bucket. I want it perfect. And I really don't want to overfill the bucket, because what happens if I overfill the bucket, I can't deliver the material to the target. So all I'm doing is burning fuel, and I'm wearing the bucket components and the teeth and the cutting edge, and I'm wearing out the machine, but I'm not getting any extra work done. And in fact, I'm going to have to come back and move that material that I couldn't carry to the target. I'm going to have to come back and move it again. So I don't want to underfill. I want to be perfect. And man, I really don't want to overfill. So the algorithms that we're developing in real time can tell the novice operator virtually continuously, hey, you're too deep, you're too open, or you're closed. It's time to get out of the office in real time, and constantly. For me, that's great. I mean, I don't run often enough. You know, that's perfect input for me. But for somebody that's running every day, that would drive them nuts. So there's also trending information that they can switch to. You know, so for the last 20 buckets, have I gotten out fast enough? Am I deep enough? Am I rotating too fast or too slow? That's the kind of information they can provide. And then it can also give the site manager tons of information about which machine. In fact, we've got a customer who he hasn't done it yet, but he wants to post on the company bulletin board each of his operators' performance at the end of the shift. And he thinks that's going to be fun. I hope it's fun. So, but our team's strength is developing these algorithms that will perfect this path. So our initial focus, our initial product is let's focus on getting the operator better. But these same algorithms and the millions of data points we're collecting, if we want to improve remote operations of a machine, the same algorithms will drive that. If we want to be semi-autonomous, the same will drive that. If we want to be fully autonomous someday, as I started this long conversation, it's too long of a conversation, would eventually we would use those algorithms to drive that as well. But that's not what customers are asking us for. Most construction operations are so complex that the human needs to be in the seat guiding the show. And we want that operator to be superhuman, but we don't want you to take control away from the operator. And that's where we've settled on at least our first product. I do think the technology is ahead of that. There's no question the technology is ahead of that. And as more and more people become comfortable with, you know, the autopilot, and as regulators in particular, in fact, I had an OSHA regulator tell me this will never be allowed in the U.S. in my lifetime. So as customers get comfortable with semi-automation and full automation, especially in construction, the technology's there, and we will provide it. Yeah, I mean, I could go on here, but I guess the other thing, go ahead.
Yeah, jump in. I had a couple points. I know Jeff's heard me say this for years, and Ken, I think, you know, I've always said my goal throughout everything I did was to take Plumber 1.0 and make them Plumber 1.2, Plumber 1.3, maybe Plumber 1.5. You're doing the same thing for operators, right?
Yeah.
But one thing I'm curious for the end user. So, you know, let's put, you probably weren't doing it at 10, but I'm just, you know, let's put 10-year-old Ken in the cab of that machine with, you know, is it fun? What's the experience? I mean, let's talk a little bit about what it's like for the user.
The users are surprised by this. So I always think, so excavator drivers, especially the well-paid ones, are fighter pilots. I mean, they really are. These guys have these men and women, I got to be careful. I need to be careful because there's so many more women in the seat of machines today, which is awesome. Their hand-eye coordination is incredible. I mean, they're really good ones. And the really good operators are really good because they want to be, and they work at it. They just don't show up to work and throw their muddy boots on the floor of the excavator and just lollygag through the day. They come to work as professionals and they go for it. And so for those operators, the experience is surprise that this tool could show them how to be better. You know, the machine doesn't have an ego. I mean, there's some standard things here, right? The machine never gets sick, never gets tired, never gets bored. Got it. Check, check, check. Got it. But also, the machine can't be fooled into thinking that a big overloaded bucket is a good thing. We can. Our eyes think, man, look at that less cool. Let's see if we can do that again. And the foreman is looking at it. Look at the loads they're getting. Those aren't always the most productive, most efficient loads, right? The machine cannot be given false positive reinforcement.
I'm imagining myself right now, Ken, on that last bit with the pipe wrench. I think I need to give it a little bit more and then,
whoa. Oh, exactly. That's exactly the analogy, right? And so the machine can't be fooled. What expert operators find is that, in fact, we have an operator that's been running a big Liebherr excavator, 100-ton machine, for 25 years. And he is 30% better than he was when he started. That's amazing to me. But there's a mindset, a culture of, I want to get better. I'm going to try it because, you know, these young kids, and I'm older than they are, than the seasoned operator. So maybe that's part of it, but I'm going to try it. And if the culture is, I'm going to give it a shot, they are very often surprised by what the machine can tell them. As I've said, I don't want the operator teaching the machine how to dig. I want the machine teaching the operator how to dig. There are some insights available that never occurred to me that I'm really surprised by. One of the things that we noticed, for example, is that if the bucket is under full, very often the operator hasn't made an effort to fill it. That I just didn't recognize that it was under full, so I didn't stay in the cut. And the machine will not be fooled by that. The machine will not be fooled by false visual input, which I think is really interesting. You know, on the novice and infrequent user side, man, they get moved up quickly. They learn really, really fast. The other part of this is that someone said, well, once they're up to speed, can I just move the system to another machine? The answer is yes, you can if you want to. But then you go back to the other three things I said about it. It never gets tired. It never gets bored. It's never sick. And it is always telling you, you know, hey, come on. You know, it is always telling you. Plus, it's a higher level of learning, right? There's classroom learning, super important. Simulator learning, really important, higher level of retention. But training in the flow of work, when you're actually doing it, that's where the training is the most sticky. You know, that's where the benefit is the greatest. Plus, I'm getting paid to move dirt right now. I'm not sitting in a classroom.
Right.
You know,
it's also where you spend most of your time.
So. That's right. That's right. Anyway, that's the experience. Now, the experience needs to get to the next level because this is visual today. And I don't like having something else in the cab for an operator to look at, frankly. So we're also developing systems that are at the next level, the next level of input. Some drivers like audio input. I like them to be able to hear what's going on around them. And I like them to be focused in on anything other than what's going on in the cab. So there's heads up work that's going on, you know, for the visual. There's an earpiece that's work that's going on. There's also haptic feedback that's going on. You know, I'm going to give you a rattle. I'm going to give you a little rattle in your hand and tell you to wake up on this function, that kind of thing. So that kind of input is happening. But again. And we're also doing some of the semi-autonomous autonomy work on the side. Like I said, I have made the mistake of trying to take control out of operators' hands before. They don't like it.
Like your experience at Caterpillar, like we're not ready for it necessarily yet for a number of different reasons, none of which are going to keep us eventually from getting there. But we need to take those steps the right way now. And I like this because, you know, this follows a trend that we've seen covering robotics consistently across the industry, that actually, like, your high performers, they can get a little bit of a performance increase and you can definitely give them more feedback and help them out. But it's actually like we saw this with the mule in masonry. It doesn't make the fastest mason much faster, but it makes the slowest mason get a lot closer. So those 300% and 150% numbers, you said 30% better for, you know, those fighter pilot types. Well, that's good, right? And we want that improvement, but that's nowhere near the 300% or, you know, 270% increase of the person who's not always on the machinery, not always running, or is new to it. I really think your customer that's thinking about putting the board up, before they do, here's my advice, is gamification's awesome. People love it. And this industry is competitive as can be.
Oh, I know.
Right?
I know.
But it's all about what's the carrot that we're hanging out there. This is the, it's funny, we did this study and I wish I could go find it now, but James used to talk about it. Like UPS, way back in when I was working on fleet management for the company I was working for, I had the salesman sit down with me and talk to me about how you implement the management of these tools, fleet management. And he's like, listen, UPS gives out thousands of gift cards, and at the end of every year, somebody wins a Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
This is really expensive.
Yeah.
But it's all based on positive impacts on efficiencies and safety. And it's like this amalgamation of those things.
Yeah.
Because that $250,000 motorcycle, they're seeing $3, $4 million in savings because people are performing more safely. So I would have him work with you, or them work with you, on the metrics that take all five of those things you care about and make a super score. And then that super score is they get, you know, in the beginning, they might just get to wear that special sticker on their hard hat, or you know,
right?
And
yeah, you know, gold stars really make you feel good. I mean, they really
love
amazing.
Gold stars.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think the gamification of it and driving those people, and I mean, you hit so many things. I want to go back to the fighter pilot analogy.
Yeah.
Because that is how we sell this industry to the next group, to the parents of the next group of people. Is don't think of this machine that you see as a dirty downgrade. It is a fighter pilot. You know, not everybody gets to be a fighter pilot, right? That's just the way it is. But many, many more of those people could become dirt movers, real high-skilled machine pilots or something. We should change the name of it, right?
Yeah. Well, they are pilots. Yeah, you're piloting the machine for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, machine pilots, because we got a lot more dirt to move than necessarily fighter planes to fly right now.
Well, that's, and I'd rather have even, yeah, I'd rather that ratio even grow. But you're right. I mean, these are tremendously skilled people. It's amazing how good operators are. I mean, not only do they produce for you, they take care of the equipment. And they know, you know, the best ones learn how to, you know, to reduce my cost because they don't abuse my equipment. And they really are tremendously valuable people. And anyway, we're very proud to be working. I've been looking for a short way to describe what we do, and I think we hit on it before the show started. You know, it's the you know, the superhuman excavator drivers. You know, that's what these people are.
Yeah.
I think, and Trent, I think you can agree with this, like, that's kind of what we're trying to do in the construction industry as a whole. We're not trying to replace people. We don't have enough.
No.
But right. I want to defend a little bit of what it's doing too, Ken, and the fact that I know the performance eval and the big brother thing gets poo-pooed a lot because, you know, people don't like to shine a light on things like that. But let's also shine a good light on the fact that, you know, especially in where I come from, like in building trades and in construction in general, this is, you know, to go to a job site, work, and then as the job scales down, people are let go from the job. I mean, this is the way it works. And a good measurement system ensures that the right people stay, the right people leave. And it's no longer, if I'm maybe one of the foremen and I'm, well, my brother stays or my cousin stays, my brother-in-law. I mean, let's be real here. Let's put facts
and data behind it. Get rid of the subjectivity. Yeah.
Oh, Trent, I say that all the time, man. Like, I'm a feelings guy. Like, I'm a positive feelings guy.
Yeah.
I'm almost always wrong, right? Trent and I fight about this all the time. He's like, Jeff, you haven't looked at the data. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to look at
the data. Yeah, I mean,
you're right. Okay.
If the top perform, you know, the top performers should stay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that mentality.
No. Well, and we're going to give, our next levels. I mean, we're already providing this for early on, but you know, there's a lot more information than just about this machine. You know, we can put this system on any machine with a blade and a bucket. We're working on hydraulic excavators today because they're 50% of the market, but we are also working with a customer right now who wants to know, he wants more information about his trucks. So what are they carrying? How many cycles are they doing? I mean, that's simple stuff for us. And I want to know whether the first pass into the truck is as good as the fourth pass into the truck. There's some things about the psychology of that first load, second load, third load, fourth load that we want to understand as well. So we're gathering data
you're
going to
learn
things.
A lot about the whole process.
Oh, it's incredible.
You know, you really just are. You're going to learn things that we don't even know.
Yeah. It's just another reminder that there's far more that I need to know than what I actually know. Like, I needed another reminder at this point in my career, it is another reminder that I need to know more than I do.
Well, we're glad we could bring you here to the Contact Crew and give you more to think about. But I think it's awesome that you gave all of us and our listeners more to think about, especially because I don't think we focus on the superhuman aspect of what we need to do. We're never going to catch up. We're not. We need. You know, you hit on this earlier about how many women that we're seeing now operate heavy equipment. And it's not only that the equipment is more built and well built for it, but that the environment is more open and we need to increase that. But we also need to find every way we can to get them up to speed, everyone up to speed faster, and get more into our environment, because we're not building less things. We don't need less right now. We need more and all levels. So I'm going to give you a chance. Give some final advice. Remember, most of the folks out there in our world are in the construction side of things. What is your advice on approaching innovation and approaching the change in this industry ahead of them?
Be open-minded, but demanding at the same time. You've got to have your customers' requirements in mind. If your definition and your definition of innovation has to match their needs, I would say be open-minded about new things. There are new ideas that are going to come to you that might not make sense in the beginning, and, you know, and evaluate them, but be demanding about what they deliver for meeting your customers' needs. And that's really the way I think about it.
Trent, that has to speak to you, man.
Oh, for sure. That's the only way to be. I think our industry is willing to change. They're innovative, and they have been for a long time. Yeah. If you look at, we just haven't thought about innovation the way, like Ken said, that we should, you know, new tools, new ways of doing anything. And we're adopting it, but it has to solve a problem. Yeah. I mean, it's got to do something for the people that use it.
Well, I'll jump on top of that and say, Ken, we're really glad to have you in our environment as an innovator, because I think too many people in our environment as innovators don't like the rigor and the accountability that you're bringing and the maturity that you're bringing. And that we don't see enough, and we need to see a lot more of. And so I hate to go against your mentor and say, we're really happy that you really suck at being retired, because I don't want to see you retire. And I want to see you keep innovating, but also keep guiding the industry with that rigor, because without it, we get outside the lines and we get where we are right now with way too many solutions looking for problems and way too much waste across the board. So I want people to follow you, check you out. Where can they go follow you? Where can they learn more about what you're up to?
You know, I'm most active on LinkedIn. So follow, you know, find Ken Gray on LinkedIn, find Dig Robotics on LinkedIn, and, you know, follow us, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect with people. And if you're going to be at Bauma, for some of your listeners and that might be at Bauma, you know, looking at the largest construction equipment fair in the world this April in Munich, check us out. For some reason, they've asked me to present to speak at Bauma, which I haven't done since about 2013. So again, another opportunity to demonstrate nobody loves the sound of their own voice more than Ken Gray. So thank you very much, guys, again, for having me on.
Well, we enjoy the sound of your voice. Trent, it's always great sitting down with you, man. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, even though I'm standing, you know me, I'm always standing. But yeah, great to stand or sit down with y'all.
That's right. Just theoretically sit down, but stand, because, you know, Trent's working on that hard 75 as always. So keep it up, buddy. And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Ken Gray. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.